can't decide and torn between a romantic, comedy, action, or an indie film to watch for the weekend? Well, well, well. Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast is your ultimate guide to the latest movies. Join us as we dissect the latest on the blockbusters. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Movie Podcast, brought to you by GSMC Podcast Network. I'm your host, Stacey.
And I'm tired.
Hi, Tara. How are you today?
Tired. I'm your co-host, Sarah.
Sarah's
tired. Also tired.
Yes. Yep. This is Sarah tired. I almost said Sarah retired. Close enough.
Not quite yet.
I'm sure that, you know, etymologically retired, tired actually has to do with being tired overall, over again?
Over again, maybe, yeah.
Just constantly tired when you're retired, which is why you have to stop. That's totally what it is.
Right.
I don't know anything about retired because I am of the age where I probably won't be able to retire, but that's another topic, so we won't get on
to that. You've got some time before you have to completely figure that out.
That is true. And I'm theoretically better off, although I kind of feel worse off than the people of the age of the movies we're talking about right now.
Mm.
The people about, you know, 10 to 15 years younger than me.
Nice segue.
Yes. See how I did that?
Yeah.
So anyways, our first film today is The Darkest Minds.
Okay.
Which I just immediately knew was based off of a YA book. Haven't read it.
You just sensed it.
Couldn't have told you the author, whether the author was male or female. I was just like, that's a YA book. I can just already tell.
So who is the author?
I do not remember her name, but she is only a few years younger than me. And I think this book was published when she was like 25 or something. And I'm just like, well, I wasn't doing anything like that when I was 25. Like,
yeah.
What have I been doing with my 20s? Mm. But so anyways, I knew it was based off of a book. I did not know it was based off of a series.
Hmm.
And it is.
Yes. Boxed set. There's at least four.
Yeah, I think there's maybe six. It was originally supposed to be a trilogy. And then I don't have a clue what's going on in that story.
That always happens if it's like fantasy or sci-fi. They're never just one book.
Right.
It just never works that way. I'm still looking for Alexandra Bracken is the author.
Yes. So this is based off of the first book in the series. And as such, the ending is clearly like, hey, this is of a series.
Right.
So the story does not end. Just immediately know that they clearly are like, first of a book in a series. We're going to do a series. Let's go on. But anyways, in this movie book story, there's a disease and the acronym is IAAN, which stands for something adolescent, something, something.
AAN. Okay.
But what ends up happening is 90% of the kids end up dead. And the 10% that don't end up dead end up having superpowers.
Mm.
And there's a whole color ranking system with the superpowers.
Of course. Okay. Makes sense.
Well, and I guess it comes from the kids themselves because when they use their powers, their eyes like glow these colors.
Ooh.
So it's like, okay, we're not putting this color on you. That's the color you are. Anyways, so the lowest level is greens who are just like really super intelligent. And then there are the blues who have telekinesis.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are the golds who can control electricity.
Okay.
And then there are the reds who we later find out spit, blow, fire, breathe out fire.
Dang.
Something. And then there are the oranges.
There's something above red. Jeez.
Right. That was my first thought. That was my thought. When we finally do see a red, I'm just like, and they have like not only the colors, but there's ranking. So it's like, whatever, normal, slightly whatever. Reds are dangerous, and oranges are lethal. But I'm like, okay, but they kill people by breathing fire at them. I feel you messed that ranking up. Like, and in the same way, I feel that golds should actually be below blues, because if you just, like, if there's no electricity, do golds have power?
Mm.
I'm not quite, it's not clear if they, like, you know, could call down lightning from the sky, because
can they be taken?
Well, here's the thing. All the kids evidently can be taken out with white noise.
White noise.
Yes.
Okay.
Because we later get the explanation. We later get the explanation from a green that because people under the age of 17 can hear frequencies that adults can't, and so that's how we end up sort of controlling the kids, is that we have these guns that blow white noise. Raise at them or something.
Okay. So clarifying question. Do they lose their powers after 17?
Not clear. Because okay. When we start, the main character, Ruby, who as the older version is played by Amanda Steinberg. I don't think there's an I in there, but I keep wanting to say Steinberg.
Mm-hmm.
It starts when she's about 10 and then we jump 6 years. So she's 16. Yes. And I'm like, okay, so clearly as we see when they start rounding up all the kids with powers, there are like teenagers who have these powers. What happened to them 6 years later? Do they still have the powers? I'm not clear on how old anybody is with powers when we get to the 6 years later point.
Right.
There's some of you who look like you could easily be above 18, but I'm not sure. Because right. We end up placing all the kids who lived in camps run by, this is set up by the president, his son is one of the first people who gains power.
There's always camps.
Well, and segregation by colors, they are actually separated.
I expect.
Realize, like, okay, I'm sure you're making a statement there, but I'm not sure if you meant to or not. But yeah, so the kids are all taken. And I'm immediately, like, when we start getting into Ruby breaks out of this camp, because of course she does. That's from the trailer. You see her running around with four other kids trying not to get captured. My first thought as we see this, I'm like, how does this work? Because we see very early on that most of these kids should actually be able to break out of this camp. How do you have camps full of powered kids?
Right.
That are only controlled by, you know, a few dozen people with guns. I'm like, really?
Yeah, really? I feel like they should definitely band together and get out of those camps.
Yes. But so Ruby is an orange.
Although, are they armed with guns that shoot white noise? So maybe it's not quite as easy.
The blues can freaking, you know, move things with their mind. I'm like, just take the gun out of their
hands.
There
you go. There you go.
What? I don't buy that all the kids are still in these camps. But anyways, let's just go with that they are. And of course, we want to escape. Ruby is an orange.
And of course, now I want to know. Now I want to both see the movie and read the book to find out what if the book explains any of this more
I definitely want to see if the book explains it more clearly, because it is sort of like, I feel you definitely said more in the book, but we just don't have time in the movie. And so we have a wonderful little helpful colored pyramid that our wonderful Dr. Exposition explains to us so that the audience knows the basic premises of this.
Right.
And he clearly explains Ruby's an orange. We're not at first told why oranges are so dangerous, but they're supposed to be sort of killed on sight. Ruby ends up managing to convince the doctor to change her into a green. And so she lives out 6 years as a green. But again, considering the green, and it's so, again, continuing with the what the heck is
the greens
camps,
are the super intelligent ones, right?
Yes.
Okay.
And so we march them around the camp to where they go into a factory and lace up boots. I don't know why. That's what you do with the really super intelligent kids, is you have them lacing up boots. Like, okay. But that's where we start with the movie. Ruby's pretending to be a green. She's lacing up the boots, but she's evidently doing it wrong. You're supposed to go over, and Ruby's going under.
And Ruby.
Yeah, there's another green next to her, who tries to defend her by telling the guard, no, they're supposed to go under because that makes them tighter. I feel there must be more about that backstory in the book. Like, who's this person who's helping defend you? Does she know you're not actually a green? Why is she standing up for you? Because she then gets dragged off. And then we get a test, which ends up being the white noise test that I guess they do at times.
Mm-hmm.
But this one is somehow different. Somehow Ruby passes out. And when she wakes up, she's handcuffed to a bed and learns that, oh, they know you're an orange. They're going to kill you. So she is helped to escape by a doctor played by Mandy Moore, who's actually working for a secret organization that tries to rescue the kids from the camps to possibly train them to use their powers and or be an army. It's not clear. And of course, I'm sure that's probably explored in further books. We don't fully get the explanation.
Right.
Ruby escapes from the camp, but then later escapes from Mandy Moore and her coworker and runs into the other three kids that she ends up running around, which is Chubbs, who is a green, Zoo, who is a gold, and Liam, who is a blue. So you get almost the full color spectrum.
Oh, they should have at least one more. Come on.
Well, you can't have a red. The reds are, they breathe fire.
But the always? Also, I mean, do they just breathe fire every time they exhale?
Well, it's not clear. And again, continuing with the, I'm not sure how you can control these kids at all because they should have been able to escape like 100 times over. We later find out that pretty much all the reds are like used as controllable weapons by the government.
Oh.
And I'm just like, but how do you control them?
Darn they you, reds.
They breathe fire. Like, it, what? I just, the ability of this system to have ever functioned, period, but let alone for 6 years, feels very flimsy. I'm just like, why? Because we later find out from Liam's backstory that he helped basically all the kids at his camp escape by using his telekinesis to like bust open the camp's gates. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, there, you should not ever be able to control like any blue. They have telekinesis. They can just like bust the door open. How do you have a camp full of blues? Just period. Just like, I, what? But so this is, as you said, a dystopian. There's a whole thing where while the kids are in these camps, the rest of the world has also sort of basically shut down. We get the explanation from Mandy Moore that since there were no kids, most people moved to the cities because no kids somehow equals no economy. I don't quite know how that works other than, like, you know, advertising to children. But
because we only use them as the workforce, that's
right. Or the only money we spend is for kids. I'm just like, but what?
I think it was dystopian before it was dystopian.
Right. But so as you get these kids, they're running around non-city Virginia. And so everything's pretty deserted. They're at one point in an empty mall. At another point, they spend the night in what they think is an empty motel. It's just like, so there's not really anybody out on the road except for these kids and what are called tracers, which are people who hunt down children with powers because there are evidently bounties on them.
Makes sense,
because
sure.
We need them all in the camps that we somehow can keep them in. So there is a tracer named Lady Jane, who is played by Gwendolyn Christie.
And I was going to say, is she British? She's got to be British.
She again, I'm sure this must come up more in the book to explain the whole backstory with Lady Jane, because it feels sort of like, you just randomly appeared here because we need an action scene. What the heck is going on here? So they're trying not to get caught by Mandy Moore and her doctor friend because they're not sure about their intentions. They're trying not to get caught by the tracers. But they're also trying to find this sort of magical, mystical place where supposedly kids who have escaped from camps have banded together to create essentially their own society because the only people who can help these kids are the kids themselves. And so they're trying to find this place and they go out on this road adventure dealing with all these different problems. So, yeah, I was immediately like, yeah, this thing with the powers and the ranking and the controlling of, no. I was immediately like that. But then I also had a major problem with the love story triangle. I don't even know what to call it. There's a number of times.
Is it a triangle? Because can we not have a young adult series with no triangle? I mean, come on. It's a little overdone.
I'm not sure. And I'm not sure how this goes forward in the books. Continuing, I'm just like, I don't know where that storyline is going based off of where we end it. But there are a number of times where Ruby ends up in a sort of physical position where I'm like, this could easily go into, like, you know, sexually inappropriate things. And yet she's very calm about it. There's one scene where she's just met the other three kids and they're traveling around and they spend the night at the abandoned hotel, motel, whatever. She takes a shower and then is getting out the shower, has a towel wrapped around her, and Liam knocks on the door to give her socks in the most awkward flirting way ever. But I'm just like, Ruby doesn't want to touch people because that's part of how she uses her powers. I'm like, chick, you are standing in a towel with the door fully open talking to this guy you've just met for what goes on for what feels like a longer time. I'm like, I don't think you'd be that comfortable, person who's just spent 6 years in a, you know, prison camp where the guards seem very willing to, like, at least grab you by your hair. And then for someone who, again, doesn't want to touch people, the entire film she's wearing either 3/4 sleeves or short sleeve shirts. I'm just like, what are you doing? Because she actually, when they go to the mall, she picks out a whole new outfit including a sweatshirt that she then, I'm not sure if the sweatshirt is already had 3/4 sleeves or she just scrunches them up. I'm just like, why?
Get some gloves too.
Like, I get this is, but I'm just thinking of like Rogue from X-Men.
I was just going to say that.
I'm like, you are not for someone who doesn't, and she specifically says this a couple of times to Liam. I don't, like, she backs away from him when he comes near her. She doesn't want to touch him. It's like, you are not running around with like your arms out like that. You're not. You had a choice not to be, and so you're definitely not. I cannot buy this. And that's one of the like problems I have with just the production period is like costume designer, that's not believable. But then also possibly writer or director or actors somewhere in there also not believable with like the special effects.
Mm, how come?
Because the special effects themselves, like CGI wise, actually look pretty okay. There's a scene in the trailer where Liam like pulls a tree onto the road to stop a car that's chasing them.
Mm-hmm.
And that looks fine. Like the actual pulling of the tree looks pretty believable. It's like the reactions of, you know, the people in the car behind them that I'm like, that was not well done. I'm sorry. Just like, could you not get better actors? There's just something about this film that feels like a little low budget.
They're chewing the scenery. They're acting so badly.
Well, just like that's not a believable reaction and or not believable direction. And that comes up a number of times because, again, these are kids with superpowers. So you do get things where they're supposed to, you know, react to things that aren't, of course, really there. And I'm just like, yeah, but even the adults aren't doing this well. So why? I don't know if this is because your actors aren't great or the director is not great or just like something in this when you get to these scenes where they're clearly acting against something that's not physically in front of them. I'm just like,
mm-hmm.
You're taking me out of this film. And then you get later where there's a possible love triangle. And I'm just like, again, she's way too comfortable. And there's a couple of times where like a guy ends up on top of her. And I'm just like,
overdone.
Right? I was like, what the chick who's just spent 6 years, A, pretending to be a totally different ranking than she is, because if they knew what ranking she was, they'd kill her, and B, doesn't want to touch anyone, gets really comfortable really fast after 6 years of that. I'm just like, No. My suspension of disbelief is a little off here. I'm sorry. I just...
Yeah.
And I wanted to like this film because I thought that the concept was pretty interesting, even if there's a part of me that I'm like, okay, I get, like in the same way with Divergent, where you split into the factions, that this is, you know, oh, this is how teenagers feel, because we always feel like, you know, we're outsiders and no one understands us. I'm like, yeah, but really? I don't think you ever are split into that clear cut of a category, you know, that, oh, I'm not like them, but I'm totally like these other people. It's like, I get we all want to find our tribe, but I don't know that most teenagers actually feel like they do. So this whole let's break people down into categories for every single thing, just like, you know, I wanted to approach it more like Harry Potter with the houses, but it felt more like Divergent. And I was just like, no.
Sadness.
And then it didn't end. And I'm just like, at the end of the movie, I was just like, you're setting up for, I can tell about like 15, 20 minutes before the, I'm like, are you setting up for, you are, you're setting up, oh, why are you setting up for, oh, and then found out later, it's a series.
Yep.
And I had this, and I've noticed this lately in a number of films I've seen where there are parts in the trailers, and because I see a number of films, I end up seeing these trailers multiple times. There are parts in the trailers that are not in the film at all.
Oh, really?
Or they're done, like, differently. So it's like you used a different take. But in this one, there's a scene, and this is, like, one of the main things in the trailer, where she's talking to Chubbs, who's like, I'm smart enough to know you're hiding something, and you're smart enough to be hiding it, that never came up in the movie. And once we got to a point where I could kind of tell what it probably should have come up based off of where the setting was, I was just like, I was really focused on that for some reason. I was just like, why did that never why do you put things in trailers that aren't in movies? Stupid advertising people. Like, are the people who cut the trailers not the same people who edited the film? Like, what the heck? It's a pet peeve, and continuing with the possible love triangle and not ending stories. I was just like, there's too many pet peeves and not enough good acting in this film. I'm annoyed. So I'm sad.
That's not good that your final conclusion is I'm annoyed.
I know, right? Yeah. I like Amanda Stenberg. I wanted to like this because, hey, kids with superpowers, I'm kind of all for that. But Yeah. So I don't think this film was good enough to have a sequel, and not just like because I don't want things with sequels, just end stories, but also like financial wise, I'm not sure they're going to get enough of a box office to be like, yes, right, let's make another one.
It'll be interesting.
It'll be a bit like Aragon, where it's like, we did the one, and even though there's totally a book after this, no.
Several.
Yeah.
Oh, that movie was bad, though.
It was so bad. So anyways, we're going to take a short break. Stay tuned.
Watching TV has changed over time. Streaming has become the new norm. That's why Golden State Media Concepts Television Podcast dives headfirst to the world of cord cutting. Want to be on the loop of what's hot in Netflix? Or if it's not a preference, what about original shows in Hulu? We've got you covered. Join us as we fill in the blanks and talk about movies to stream and what show you should be binging. This is the Golden State Media Concepts Television Podcast.
Welcome back to the GSMC Movie Podcast. Our second Teens with Superpowers film today is Chronicle, which is from a few years ago, and it's shot in this found footage sort of style.
Oh, no.
Well, like, not... So, when I said this to a coworker, he's like the Blair Witch Project, and I'm like, well, I
right, that's the first thing I thought of.
I haven't seen the Blair Witch Project, so I really couldn't tell you. It's clearly supposed to be from a number of different sources. So it does start out with a video camera, but then later we get like cell phone cameras and security cameras.
Mm-hmm.
But clearly, you know, not supposed to be a movie. Like, after the fact, we took all the video evidence we could find and put it together to tell the story of what happened. That sort of thing.
Okay, so that's kind of the premise, is that somebody has taken all this footage together to tell the story and yes, show what happened? Okay.
So this starts with Andrew, who is a bit of a outsider. He's clearly thought to be a bit weird. He's picked on at school. His mother has some disease that's very painful for her and also seems to be clearly killing her. His father is a drunk, and that's where we start, where he is filming at like 7:30 in the morning because he's locked his father out of his bedroom because his father's drunk. So clearly his life, not great.
Not great, no.
Yes.
But sounds pretty typical for a young adult story starting out.
Well, certainly for a young adult ends up with superpowers story.
Right.
Because as we later go on and find that they get these powers from some hole in the ground thing, it felt a bit like Power Rangers, the newer version, where, you know, one of those teens, his mother's ill and the other one is being a rebel. And I was just like, there's not enough of you to be Power Rangers and no girl has powers in this whatsoever. But this feels like Power Rangers if they had their own video cameras while they were training and no Zordon. It feels a bit like that.
Otherwise, it's exactly the same.
Well, no Alpha either. And no Rita. But yeah, anyways. So Andrew has no friends, really. He has a cousin who I believe his name is Matt. There's Andrew, Matt, and Steve, I think.
Matt, yes. Andrew, Matt, and Steve. You are correct.
I'm so proud of myself.
Good
Steve
job.
Steve is played by Michael B. Jordan, which completely threw me off when I first saw him in this film. Because we first see him, he's considered a very popular guy. I think, I'm not sure if he's actually like the stereotypical quarterback. Mm. He's running for school president. He's very popular. Everyone likes him.
Sure.
So we actually first see his face on posters for the school election. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that looks like Michael B. Jordan. But we don't see him right away. Matt convinces Andrew to go to a party they're having that some teens are having somewhere at a closed mill or something.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly a legal party. They're not supposed to be there. But hey, they're teens out in the Pacific Northwest somewhere near Seattle. So they've got nothing better to do, I guess.
Sounds about right.
I don't know. Never been to Seattle, but suppose. So Andrew constantly has his camera because that's his sort of only friend, almost.
Mm-hmm.
And
plus, he's probably separating himself by looking at the world through the lens, blah, 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 psychology.
Oh, that definitely will come up later. as he's at this party, he gets picked on. He goes outside because I forget what exactly happened, but he's kind of crying. Steve comes up to find him because they found something really cool in the woods and they want him to bring his camera, and Matt sent Steve to come find him.
Sure.
Steve is trying to actually, you know, be somewhat friendly, but also we really want to explore this whole bring your camera. Your camera has a light on it, right? Because it's at night. There's this strange hole in the ground that makes this strange sound.
Oh.
Which is what, it's interesting because we hear from Steve that it's him and Matt and a bunch of other people. But when we get there, it's just Matt and all the other people were like, oh, we're bored. We're going to leave. But they're so entranced by this hole that they decide to go down it, as you do.
Yeah.
Because that's total.
I am not going down a hole in the ground that's making noise.
Well, and my first thought was because Michael B. Jordan is very much like, yes, let's go explore this hole. Let's go down the hole. And then they get to this strange, glowy, clearly alien looking thing. And he's like, I have to go even closer. I'm like, you know what? Your character kind of deserves to die by that whole stereotypical black guy dies first in a horror film thing. You are deserving that right now, man. Like, this is the dumbest thing ever, but you clearly deserve to follow that stereotype.
Wow. See, now I'm thinking, they have the camera. Can't they, like, lower it down somehow so they can at least maybe see what's down there, sort of?
Well, they can't, because down the hole and then they have to walk along a tunnel.
But they don't know that yet.
They don't. Again, I don't know why they decided to go down the hole, period. That is not my first thought of strange hole in the middle of the night. But anyways, they do. Something happens, and we're not quite sure what, because the next time we see the camera, it's clearly been a few weeks. And they've discovered they've got these powers, which they, being typical teenage boys, decide to use to essentially do stupid things.
Of course.
Like throw baseballs at each other's face, but see if they can stop it before it hits them. That is literally the first thing we see after the strange thing down the hole, is them doing the quote-unquote baseball test to see if they can stop the baseball hitting their face before it. I'm just like, really? It's been 3 or so weeks and you know you have these powers and this is what you do? Okay. But then they decide, you know what? We need to go bigger. We need to train. This is like a muscle. We need to, you know, not just do this in the backyard. So they go to a store and use their powers to play pranks on people. As you do. Just like, as the power parts get started, I'm like, okay, I get this is supposed to be teenage boys, but really?
But I was just, yeah, I can't even come up with a, wow, I feel kind of bad for teenage boys. Who, yes, okay, you know, I'm sure teenage boys do stupid stuff all the time, but do they have to portray them as that?
Well, and
dumb?
I'm just like, even more so, because we later, as they're, you know, discovering more about their powers, we get one point where they're talking about, like, they're looking on a cell phone. They're looking up telekinesis, and I'm just like, would three teenage boys, not one of you, really know about telekinesis? Like, you've never seen an X-Men film? Really? Filmmaker, I'm not fully buying this. And this is actually an original idea. The filmmaker, and it was written by him and someone else. So it's not, like, based off of a book or anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's based off of a story idea they had, but I'm just like, I'm not quite buying this. I can kind of buy the, oh, I've got superpowers, so the first thing I'm going to do is be really dumb with it. But none of you know telekinesis? No. But so anyways, as the film goes on, their powers get stronger, but things start going a little wrong. Andrew feels a bit, he still feels a bit on the outside. Even though Steve, you know, is trying to, they start hanging out more and Steve tries to get more people to like him. He convinces Andrew to use his powers in a talent show to do magic tricks, which is really cool. But on the other hand, continuing with my, I'm not sure that your idea of teenagers and my idea of teenagers is the same. After this talent show, they go to a party and everyone's like, oh, Andrew, that was amazing. And I'm like, would teenagers really be that impressed by a magic show? Even if, yeah, okay, that was cool magic and you can't explain it. This is the guy they just picked on the day before.
Right.
Like, nobody at school is friends with this guy. And now he goes to this party and everyone likes him. And girl comes up and flirts with him and wants to take him upstairs. But that doesn't quite work out well.
I wish it was kind of that easy, you know, right? You're bullied, like, and then you do something kind of cool and people are like, you know what, we like you.
Except,
well, I don't know.
I mean, maybe we're supposed to believe that the people at this Pacific Northwest high school are all sort of flimsy in their beliefs, because they very quickly bully him again. Mm-hmm. After, when he goes upstairs with the girl, he actually ends up vomiting. It's not clear there's a thing going on throughout the film, at least between Andrew and Matt, who was actually his cousin, where when, like, one's using the powers, the other one has, like, physical ramifications. Oh. So Matt at certain times gets, like, a nosebleed when Andrew's using his powers.
Well, that sucks.
I don't think Steve does, and I'm not sure if it's because it's family or if I just didn't recognize the time. I don't remember Steve ever getting the nosebleed, but Matt does. So there's something tying them together where one uses the powers, we recognize it through the other, but I'm not sure why. But so anyways, Andrew, he tries to get to this, you know, happier place in life. It doesn't quite work. He, his father kind of finds out about it, but then, you know, Andrew's got the power, so it's not like his father can beat him up anymore.
Right.
Andrew goes to pick up the medication for his mother, but his family's, you know, a little poor, not well off. His mother's medication is something like $700, because I guess they don't have really good insurance or insurance at all.
Right.
Yikes. His father's on some sort of pension because he got injured doing something and doesn't work. Andrew doesn't have that money, but his mother is in pain without the medication. So he decides to put on this firefighter gear that I'm not sure where he gets it from or why.
Okay.
And go and rob some of the people who have bullied him in the past.
In firefighter gear?
Well, I guess so they don't know who he is.
Right.
But that doesn't quite work.
That seems like the clunkiest, like...
It's, well, because he has a mask on.
You know how much that stuff weighs?
It's the coat and the overall pants or whatever, and then he has on, like, a breathing mask, so you can't really tell who he is. But then the bullies immediately know who he is because he has on his same backpack, and they're like, it sounds like Andrew, and that person's wearing his stupid backpack. I think it's Andrew.
Oh, my gosh.
He possibly maybe kills them or something and then takes their money, but it's not enough, and I'm like, dude, you have superpowers, and you clearly put on this thing so then no one would recognize you. Just go break into the pharmacy. Why are we going around robbing people? Just break into the actual pharmacy, but that somehow never occurs to him. So he tries to rob a gas station, and he does, but then the gas station person is like, you're not taking my money, comes after him with a shotgun or a rifle or something, which he uses his powers to deflect right as it's fired, which then blows up the gas station. So he ends up in the hospital.
And this is all done with found footage.
And again, this is one of the major problems with the film, is the found footage angle, because at times it's kind of ridiculous that you'd have any footage from this. Like, why wouldn't people still be filming?
Right.
When they're starting to use their powers more, Andrew, he means to just sort of play a prank on this person who's sort of tailgating them and beeping at them behind him. He ends up sending that person off the road, crashing into a lake, and then continues to film as his two friends freak out, jump into the water to swim, save this person, call 911. But Andrew continues filming. And there's a character in this named Casey, who's a blogger. That's literally all we really know about her. Her name's Casey. She's a blogger, and Matt kind of had a crush on her. So we have that, to have a different camera angle, but a reason for it. And it's just like, there are a number of things in this where, yeah, this camera would not be on. Like, I can't really buy this, including the confrontation between him and his dad. We see his dad snooping around his room through the camera, even though he's not in there, he's with his mom. I'm like, why is this camera on in your room?
He just left it on to make sure nobody was stealing his stuff.
And then when they have the confrontation, the camera's also on, and I'm just like, why is the camera on? What is this? Like, it's just, there are a lot of times I'm like, these people would not still be filming. I can get with the security footage, okay, fine. Or after the gas station blows up, his father comes to see him in the hospital, and we're given the line from someone off screen that, oh, the camera needs to remain on for our investigation. And there's a camera focused on. I'm like, okay, that's a little flimsy, but whatever. But
I was just going to say, there's some really, really specific exposition going on here.
Like, the people, especially Andrew, who's constantly filming, and as the film goes on, this clearly becomes a sort of psychological thing. He learns how to sort of float the camera without touching it. So it can constantly be on while he's doing other things, filming him as he starts to go into his dark side. He, you know, it's like he needs the camera on to witness or something. I'm not quite sure. But he does go a bit to the dark side. He starts getting this idea about because he has these powers, he's a quote-unquote apex predator. Oh. So he's better than everyone else and should be able to act that way. That's not how Matt and Steve feel. And so there's a conflict, including a final battle, which has them constantly crashing around what looks to be Seattle. And I'm just like, okay, so that makes for why we'd have all these various different camera things, but you go crashing through a number of different things. One of you should have been killed by now. Just because you're actually trying, Andrew at least is actually trying to kill Matt, and you have superpowers to like send a bus flying at him. How are you not dead? I'm just like, I can't believe that this is going on this long just because you should be dead. You should be. You should be. I don't know why you're not.
Wow.
But whatever.
This, wow.
Yeah, so it was an interesting film. I did not recognize anybody in the cast except for Michael B. Jordan.
Right.
I can see why this did pretty well at the box office because it had a low budget, something like $12 million or something.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell from like the CGI when they're, you know, sort of levitating or moving things, it's like, oh yeah, that's fake. Like the baseball is fake. At one point, Michael B. Jordan uses his mind to move a parked car. And I'm like, that's clearly not real. That's clearly like computer animated. You can tell for the, you know, CGI stuff. But this actually did really well at the box office. It made something like 120 something million.
And I was just looking on Rotten Tomatoes just to see, you know, and it got like 85% critic rating and 71% audience. So it
I can see
did
that
pretty well.
Because again, it's doing something new with the superhero genre with the whole found footage thing. We're taking that, you know, general genre and going at it from a different angle. There's supposedly a somewhat of a sequel in the works, at least script-wise. I'm not sure why, given where this film ends. I was just like, okay, I'm kind of interested until about two-thirds of the way through. And then once we get to the, Andrew is actually really kind of crossed over to the dark side part, I'm a little actually less interested. Mm. Like, even though, you know, that's supposed to be sort of the main conflict, I'm just like, yeah, but I was actually more interested when it was you guys being really stupid with your powers. And I was totally expecting like something to come from that. Like when Andrew caused the car to crash, like, oh, this is not good. We're using our powers for bad. I didn't actually expect someone to go to the dark side and then you'd fight each other. It's just like that actually got too typical. And it's so very interesting because I did not think this for most of the film. But then when Andrew crosses to the dark side, he actually looks a lot to me like Luke Skywalker from episodes 5 and 6 for some reason.
Oh.
So I was just like, I kept thinking of Star Wars the whole time that was happening. It was just like his hair is blowing and I'm just like,
was he whining?
He kind of was. He feels, you know, he should be better. I was like, so is this what it would look like if Luke had been convinced by the Emperor to actually cross over and kill his father? I was like, this is like the B-roll of Star Wars, except no lightsabers. But that's kind of what it feels like. And then it ends, and I was just like, about two-thirds of the way through, I was like, yeah, whatever. But up till then, I was like, actually pretty interesting film.
Okay.
Especially with this, for some odd reason, we're filming everything in our lives, even though, you know, it's supposed to be modern day, came out in 2012. It's supposed to be 2012. I'm like, someone's going to get footage of this, you know? Like, why are you putting things on film for superpowers that, again, in the same way, I don't believe you don't know about telekinesis. I don't believe you wouldn't think if ever anyone got their hands on this, we'd be taken by the government and studied. I'm just like, what? You're just so fun. Fun until the ending, and then it's sort of like they just felt they needed a big superhero battle and couldn't think of a better way to do it. So I kind of agree with both. I can see why critics would rate it higher than audiences, but I can also see why audiences still would have really liked it, and it did well at the box office. So overall, pretty good.
Okie dokie, then.
Yes. And on that note, we're going to end for today. Thank you for listening to the GSMC Movie Podcast.
You've been listening to the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast, part of the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network. You can find this show and others like it at www.gsmcpodcast.com. Download our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just type in GSMC to find all the shows from the Golden State Media Concepts Podcast Network, from movies to music, from sports to entertainment, and even weird news. You can also follow us on Twitter and on Facebook. Thank you, and we hope you have enjoyed today's program.